the Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creators of Phonebox and Oasis. Welcome to the Social Studio.
This is the Radio Today programme and I'm Stuart Clarkson, looking after the podcast for Trevor Dan for the next few weeks. Later, some headlines from our industry this week, plus our usual history lesson from David Lloyd. But this week on the programme, we pay tribute to another broadcasting legend lost too soon. Mike Smith was the only jock to do breakfast on both Radio 1 and London's Capital FM. He died on the 1st of August, aged 59, following complications from heart surgery. Well, the nation knew him from TV's The Late Late Breakfast Show with Noel Edmonds, BBC Breakfast Time, Top of the Pops, and the quiz show That Show Business. But the medium he preferred was radio, as he told Chris Moyles for a BBC documentary about Radio 1 breakfast DJs a few years ago.
Radio I miss more than television.
Right.
And radio I miss tremendously. Radio is a really special medium because radio, as you know, is contact with the audience in a very special way. It's a privilege to be let into people's lives and to talk to them. And I just find sometimes that when I'm listening to the radio, that the people doing it are not talking to me, they're talking to themselves, or they're talking to an inclusive group. And I have to include your style of broadcasting in that. Sometimes...
I do.
Your style of broadcasting, you know, it doesn't pull me in. And to me, breakfast radio particularly, is about connecting with a listener.
That's Mike Smith talking in 2010. Well, leading the tributes this week was Smithy's Late Late Breakfast Show partner, Noel Edmonds, who said, "I'm totally stunned and heartbroken for Sarah and his family. Mike introduced me to motor racing and I introduced him to radio. We enjoyed a very special on-screen chemistry. He was so much more than simply a presenter. Mike was that rare individual, the consummate broadcaster in an era when professionalism, dedication and hard work were truly valued. I wish I'd told him more forcefully and frequently how much I admired his talent and valued his support." Here's another from Philip Schofield. "There are no words. My wonderful, bright, funny, thoughtful friend Mike Smith has passed away." Well, after Chelmsford Hospital Radio, Mike began doing freelance work as a producer and helper behind the scenes at Radio 1. That was in 1975. He did get on air as well as a cover presenter. In 78, though, he went off to Euston Tower for 4 years at Capital, including a couple on The Breakfast Show. But it was back to Radio 1 in 1982, where he took over early breakfast on weekdays and mid-mornings on a Saturday.
Best of luck with the first show, Mike.
Thank you very much, Tony, and thanks to you, Maggie, as well.
Just remember one thing.
Yes?
Don't take commercial breaks.
Good night.
Bye-bye. Radio 1, oh, the weekend's out today. Oh, the Mike Smith on Saturday. Oh, he'll make you dance and sing. Oh, the best thing happened. Thank you, George. George Benson and Love Ballad.
Oh, it's 10:05. Oh, and it's Saturday morning. Welcome to the new Saturday show on Radio 1. So this is Saturday morning, is it? I haven't seen it from this angle for quite some time, I must admit. It doesn't look a lot different from Friday. It's sort of got the same sort of feel, and it's only that pile of washing up in the corner that makes it different.
After weekday early, Smithy had a year on lunchtimes before departing Radio 1 again briefly to present Breakfast Time on BBC Television. In May 1986, though, he was back to take over Mike Reed's Breakfast Show. And I've been speaking to Johnny Beerling, his boss at the time. He was a senior producer at Radio 1 through the 60s, 70s and early 80s, and then, of course, the network's controller from 1985 to 93. Tell me, Johnny, first of all, when did you first meet Mike Smith? It was quite a long time before he actually became famous, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. He was always hanging around on the fringes of the motor racing circuits, you know, and Noel Edmonds was very into production saloon car racing. And we were testing Noel's car up at Silverstone, and Mike turned up to watch us doing that, and we got chatting, and one thing led to another, and he started to do sort of drop-ins and little bits and pieces around Radio 1 in the mid-70s. And he also went to work at Brands Hatch, the racing circuit. I don't know if you know, but he was actually quite a good racing driver himself, and he was quite keen to get on, and he raced Formula Ford cars.
And I think he got Noel into cars, didn't he? And they kind of shared each other's passions.
That's right, but he had a very bad accident at Alton Park and broke his leg, and I think that sort of put an end to his racing career. And eventually, of course, in about 1977, he started doing the graveyard shift, the early show on Radio 1, and then went off to Capital to get more experience between 78 and 82. And then eventually, when he came back from Capital Radio, he got lunchtimes on Radio 1.
And you were presumably quite pleased to see him come back after he'd been quite high profile at Capital. He did breakfast there, didn't he?
Yes, he was. He was breakfast there, and he'd got more experience and got more mature and what have you, and he was a very inventive presenter, so we were pleased to have him. Unfortunately, it didn't last all that long because the attractions of television sort of won over the attraction of radio, as far as Mike was concerned. He was trying to do too much, I suppose. He was an ambitious young guy, and so the BBC had just started Breakfast Time about then, so he decided his future was with Breakfast Time, which I wasn't best pleased about. Anyway, he stayed there on Breakfast Time for a couple of years and then eventually took over from Mike Reed on the Radio 1 Breakfast Show. You know, he was well promoted then and he did a good job on that.
That was just after you took over as controller, wasn't it? I think you started in the spring of 85 and he was your first breakfast hire.
Yes, he was. That's true. And very good he was too. I remember he came up with some quite inventive ideas. I remember we were planning the Christmas show and he said, why don't we run a competition? And I suppose they'd been running competitions on Capital, but this one was for four youngsters to go to see Father Christmas in Finland. So we eventually ran the competition. Chris Lysett was the producer and one or two of the secretaries went as sort of chaperones for the kids and they took them off and they made a really magical radio show series out of it because they broadcast for three or four consecutive mornings and they built the excitement. First of all, they just saw the reindeer and then there were little signs about, sorry, I'm very busy this week from Father Christmas. I'll be coming along later, you know, and eventually, of course, on the very last day, Santa Claus arrived and it was just magic because the kids were only, I don't know, 10 or 12, something like that. So they were really into the spirit of the whole thing. It was very, very good radio.
I suppose he was one of the first people to really be a radio star and a big TV star at the same time.
Well, he was, you see. This was the problem again, the allure of television. I wasn't best pleased because he did the breakfast show for 2 years and I'd reckon a breakfast show presenter ought to be there for 4 years. But the allure of television, and he was working with Noel on the... what was the programme called in the evening?
Late, Late Breakfast Show?
Yeah, I think that was the one. He was sort of like the number two to Noel on that. And, you know, it had high profile because it was Saturday evenings at 6 o'clock, something like that. So he was doing very well. And in the end, he said, I'm going to have to give up. I can't do the breakfast show and do this. And so he went away again. But he pulled some good stunts, you know. Was on April the 1st, he said, I've got Prince coming on my program, and everybody thought it was going to be Prince the rock star, and it turned out to be Prince Edward, who was sort of friendly with Mike through work Mike had done, I think, with the Prince's Trust. And through that association, we did cover the It's a Royal Knockout. We put the Radio 1 Roadshow in there, and he got very good interviews with royal participants at Alton Towers. If you remember, there was quite a lot of fuss about the royal family sort of lowering itself to doing that sort of game show thing. But he got interviews with Princess Anne and the Duchess of York. And there were lots of celebrities taking part, Tom Jones and John Travolta and so on. And Mike really entered into the spirit of it and made a good radio programme of it, even if it wasn't a particularly good television one.
And at that time, I suppose, in the mid-80s, Radio 1 was... has since been lampooned a little bit for being smashy and nicey and your Tony Blackburn cheesy kind of DJs. Mike wasn't like that. Yeah, exactly. And listening back to Mike now, to the air checks of him, he sounded just like a normal guy.
Well, yes, he was a normal guy. He was. He came from a sort of a reasonable background. His dad had worked at Ford's. I suppose that's why he was sort of always interested in the car racing side of things. And then he'd worked in hospital radio before he started doing stuff for us. And he was always making himself useful. I remember one time we were doing a series called Quiz Kid with Alan Freeman, and we were recording it up in Norwich, and Fluff had left all the cartridges behind, and Mike just jumped into his sports car and drove up to Norwich and delivered all this in time for the recording. I mean, that was the sort of chap he was, always willing to sort of chip in and help people out.
I mean, he didn't come back to radio, as some people have done after a period away. Do you think he ever would have done? And do you think he would have been a natural if he did come back?
No, I think he... maybe he did model himself on Noel Edmonds. I don't know. He became quite a successful businessman because after the helicopter crash, it didn't put him off being involved with helicopters. He bought a couple of his own and set up a company providing a flying camera platform for the news people. I mean, Sky News and the BBC used his services, I understand, to whenever there was an event that needed coverage from the air, Mike's company was there.
And have you got one memory of Mike that you'll always remember him for?
Yes, in his white shorts, very short white shorts, on the Radio 1 roadshow at Eastbourne, where there was a big crowd. And, you know, he entered into the spirit of it and entertained the public. But we shot a little promotional film about the roadshow, and I've still got a copy of that. And there's Mike on there talking to a young punter who comes up with a plate of foam on a plate and put it in his face. That was quite funny.
That's Johnny Beerling. Another man no stranger to wearing those small white shorts on the roadshow stage is Mike Reed, breakfast DJ on Radio 1 from 81 to 86, and the man who made way for Mike Smith.
He was the first local radio DJ to win a Sony Award. It was the inception of that particular award that year for a local radio DJ, and he won it in 1982. He also joined Radio 1 towards the end of 1982, and he did his first Top of the Pops that year. So there are defining years that we all have. I can remember mine, and I guess for Mike, that was probably, if someone had asked him, a defining year to win a Sony Award as a local broadcaster, to join Radio 1 and do your first Top of the Pops. So 1982, I think, was probably a pretty major year for him.
And when he came in, he was doing early breakfast. He was your warm-up, essentially, wasn't he?
Yes, I mean, it was very... Adrian John also did the early morning for a while as well. I mean, Mike did come in 1982, and then he went off to do television for a while, and then returned. He did Top of the Pops in that time and Radio 1, then went off to do TV again. So I think he came back again and then took over the breakfast show from me, I think, in the early summer of 1986. I'd done 5.5 years, and I think it is quite a long time to get up in the morning. Of course you enjoy it. Of course one, you know, never wants anything good to end, but inevitably you move positions. You have your run. Tony Blackburn had done it for a few years. Noel Edmonds had done it. David Lee Travis had done it for a couple of years. Then I had a 5.5 year run, and then Mike came in and did it for 2 years. I mean, I was still doing daily programs, weekend programs. So, I mean, I was at Radio 1 until the end of 1991. So in the middle of 1986, I wasn't going anywhere. It's just like playing a different position on the pitch. It's, you know, it's like saying to Wayne Rooney, right, move back a bit, you know, drop back into a central position rather than scoring the goals. You know, it was fine. Of course, no one ever wants to. And they always wheel things around, like, you know, he axed and chopped and all the rest of it. But there's really nothing like that, that after a period of 5.5 years or something, there comes a natural time in anything, you know, the tide at the affairs of men and all that. You know, you just think, okay, and you move to a different position.
And Mike Smith, as a DJ, was a little bit different. He wasn't the Tony Blackburn, and to some extent, you know, some of the others who were quite cheesy in a way. He was a normal bloke, and he sounded on air like he sounded in real life.
Yeah, I mean, everyone had their own style. I mean, I think that's the whole point of a team. You don't want, you know, 10 Tony Blackburns, you know, you don't want 10 Mike Smiths. It's having a team of people that have some sort of individuality, that work as a team. You don't want them all to sound the same. You want a common denominator. They've got to be part of that A team, but, you know, they've all got to be a little bit different and have their own style. I think we all did, and Mike certainly did, had his own style, which is what made him part of the team during the 80s.
What are your fondest memories of working with him?
Well, strange, you know, we were always, all the DJs were a little bit ships in the night. People imagine that we all hung out together and did things together, but we didn't unless it was a week away. We had various weeks away where we all got to know each other a little bit better. In fact, I was saying to Tony Blackburn recently, because I work with Tony quite a bit now, and I said, you know, we probably see each other and talk more now than we did at Radio 1, because it was an era where everyone was busy or rushing from pillar to post, and we said, you know, we probably bumped into each other once every 2 months. And yet, because you're at Radio 1, people imagine you're in each other's pocket. So with Mike, you know, with me moving to a different time of day, I probably wouldn't see that much of him. And we didn't. You came in, did your program. The next person came in, did theirs, went home. So we weren't really living in each other's pockets. I mean, I saw, obviously, a lot more of Sarah Green because I was working for 5 years with Sarah on Saturday morning TV. So, you know, I'd hear what Mike was up to probably secondhand from Sarah.
Yeah, that was the TV programme of my youth. Many Saturday mornings spent watching Saturday Superstore. Do you think Mike would have ever come back to radio? He was very passionate about radio. It was always his first love. He preferred it over TV. Do you think in later life he might have come back and done BBC local radio like you and Tony are doing these days?
Yeah, it's difficult to know. I mean, if you enjoy radio, I think you sort of, like anything, you know, you just sort of keep doing it and you keep up to speed. It is difficult, as a lot of people will attest to the fact that it's difficult to come back and get on the merry-go-round because it keeps moving. And it's difficult to get off for a few years and get back on and get up to speed. But I always assume it's quite a businessman. He's quite an astute guy. That's how he came over. Like Peter Powell, you know, who done radio and wanted to go into the business aspect of it, and he had his aerial photography company and did a lot of television as well. I mean, he did things like Pop the Question, That's Entertainment, which is a very, very popular TV show. So he was obviously very good at that and enjoyed doing that. He and Sarah, obviously, you know, very, very committed to each other, very much a couple. I was sort of very much, I mean, obviously I knew Sarah a lot better, seemed very much committed and supportive of each other as a couple. And Sarah used to joke, because Mike Smith and Mike Reed sound very similar, I mean, it's a similar sounding name, she said people would often go up to her and say, oh, we're so pleased you and Mike Reed got married, you know, you work together so well. She said, no, it's Mike Smith I married. Oh, I'm terribly sorry. So I think because the fact that we both did The Breakfast Show and our names are not dissimilar, you know, people sometimes, you know, got a little confused.
And were they the best of times for Radio 1? You think of some of the names that were on in the mid-80s, obviously you and Mike and Bruno and Simon Mayo, Steve Wright. Has Radio 1 ever been better than it was in 85, 86?
One always likes to imagine that you were there during the golden age of radio, but I think that there were probably several golden ages. The 80s was certainly a very good period, and people do hold that up as being a great era for radio, and in some ways, bizarrely, you were treated the same, especially in doing the sort of front-running shows and TV shows, as the bands. You know, you get same treatment as the top groups, that in many ways you were sort of pop stars as well, in a strange way, during the 80s.
Did Mike enjoy that? You get the impression he didn't, really.
I don't know whether he liked the fame or not. It depends. It's all down to the individual, whether I don't think you sit and think about the fame. I think if you enjoy what you're doing, then you get the best out of it. If you love what you're doing and you think, aren't I lucky? And I think we all felt that, you know, Mike Smith, me, everybody, we all probably felt, wow, we're lucky, we're doing the things we love. And I do stuff outside radio and television, and Mike did as well. I mean, he had his flying, he loved his cars, like he was involved with the car phone warehouse at one point as well. So, you know, he had other fish to fry as well as, you know, enjoying the life of being on radio and television.
That's Mike Reed there. Let's have a listen to a bit more Smithy now. Here he is on the 2nd of November 1987 with an important announcement.
7:29 on Radio 1. 10:53, 10:89 a.m. medium wave around the country, and this is the first ever stereo weekday breakfast show happening at the moment. We're going out on 104.8 FM in the London and the South East area, Central Scotland to follow soon afterwards. We hope by Christmas or the early part of next year we'll have the Central Scotland transmitter online. It's all part of Radio 1 being stereolised. 104.8, the right-hand end of the FM dial if you're around London and the South East this morning. If you're around England, be warned, it's fog everywhere this morning, apart from the southwestern tip of England. So rail services, aircraft and roads badly affected by reduced visibility because of fog this morning. Slow to clear. It won't clear until lunchtime today. That's the travel news. The chart coming next.
Mike Smith Breakfast Show.
In about 3 minutes' time, it's Monday morning, the 2nd of November at 7:30.
Let's hear from some more former colleagues paying tribute. Five Live's Nicky Campbell this week spoke on air to Simon Mayo.
I think he was the first Radio 1 presenter who then could turn up on television and front breakfast television and could do almost anything. You know, you could put him anywhere and he would shine and he would sparkle. And the breakfast show that he took over, I joined Radio 1 in 86 and he started doing the breakfast show in the same month, and it was an appointment to listen. It was, you know, you had to listen to that show, and he was a great DJ. I mean, he knew precisely what he was doing, and he was one of those guys who was just always in control.
And when you joined, what, 86, as you say, I joined in 87, and we went into quite a mysterious and many would say a bizarre world, didn't we, with some larger-than-life characters. And I don't know if you found this, but I find Mike to be incredibly supportive.
Yes, it was a period when dinosaurs roamed the particular corridors of Egton House, where Radio 1 was stationed, and he was a big beast to go up against all the other big beasts. And because he hadn't been there quite so long as some of the other guys, he was there, and he had the main show, he had the show that everybody wanted, but because he hadn't been there quite so long, I think he always felt slightly on the outside. Of things. But when there was one Top of the Pops that we did together, and he gave me a lift in his open top sports car to Shepherd's Bush, where Top of the Pops was, and then he took me and my wife to the pizza place afterwards. You know, he was very much, I felt like the new kid at secondary school, and he was the shiny, sparkly head boy who had absolutely everything, you know, and that's pretty much how I remember him, I think.
That's Simon Mayo talking to his one-time Radio 1 colleague Nicky Campbell on 5 Live this week about Mike Smith. Another tribute here, this one from Tim Blackmore, who says Smithy was one of the most intelligent of broadcasters, imaginative of businessmen and loyal of friends. I'm missing him already, he says. And there's more from Tim in this week's eRadio newsletter. Nicky Horn says, truly shocked to hear of the death of Mike Smith. He was a colleague at Capital at a glorious time in its history, that, of course, in the early 80s. Matthew Bannister says, very sad to hear of the untimely death of DJ Mike Smith. I worked with him at Capital and Radio 1. One of the good guys. And our regular host here on the Radio Today programme, Trevor Dan, worked with Mike as well. Trevor.
Thank you, Stu, and thanks for minding the shop. I just wanted to pop in to say that I'm as sorry as everybody to hear about Mike Smith. It's a great tragedy, and I send my love, obviously, to Sarah. I last saw Mike and Sarah, actually, at the Radio Festival a couple of years ago, and I thought how brilliantly he had done in terms of just getting over not being a celebrity. He'd reinvented himself in a way that some people who've been famous always struggle to do. And I was very admiring of how he'd done that, and just what a nice kind of rounded couple they were. But I wanted to talk about how Mike's remembered as a DJ, as a radio DJ. But for me, his greatest contribution to broadcasting was that he is the unsung hero of Live Aid. He wasn't at Wembley Stadium, but he held together the 4 or 5 hours that we had to do from a nightclub somewhere near BAFTA on Piccadilly in London, linking the material that was coming at us from Philadelphia. And if you remember, the Live Aid show from Philadelphia was fantastically badly organised, and there were huge overruns, massive gaps between all the acts. And all our presenters, they were all good presenters, but they were not as experienced as Mike Smith. So people like Andy Kershaw and Mark Ellen, they'd been up and working since 10 a.m. By the time we got to midnight, they were pretty shattered. And I would say to them, could you just do a bit? And they'd go, do we have to? And I'd have the exec producer in my ears from the truck saying, can you fill until Crosby, Stills and Nash? Yeah, how long, Mike, I would say. And he'd say, oh, I don't know, 25 minutes. So we were sitting in this nightclub with a few people the worse for wear to interview and some old clips to use. And Mike Smith completely held this together. And he also, right at the very end, which was something like 3:30 in the morning, we had to say, can you just do the closer? And he came up with, I don't know what they were, but just the right words to close Live Aid. And I thought what a brilliant performance he'd put in. And I'll always be grateful to him for that. So well done, Mike, and we'll miss you. And a consummate broadcaster to the very end.
16 hours ago, just over 16 hours ago, we came on the air with this marathon broadcast, the biggest charity fundraising event that's ever been organised anywhere in the world. We didn't quite know what to expect. I think everything has gone beyond everybody's expectations, if they had any in the first place. The money that's been raised is phenomenal. We think an expected final figure just pledged on the phones around the world, some £30 million by the end of tonight. To one particular famine-stricken corner of one continent, we just wish you all the best of luck in the world and an end to your famine. We will leave you tonight from London on BBC One and on Radio 1 and Stereo VHF with
That's Mike Smith closing the Live Aid broadcast there. Mike will be sorely missed by all those who knew him, worked with him, and of course those who listened to him as well. You can see that affection for him in the many tributes in the papers and on social media over the last few days. This is the Radio Today programme. Still to come this week's other industry news and some radio moments.
Broadcast Bionics, creators of Phonebox and Oasis, offer you elegantly integrated products and intelligent one-stop shopping for all your studio needs. Discover a full range of innovative studio products. Play out by Wide Orbit, Music Master Scheduling, Stirlitz, MuseBoss, Larvo, Telos, Axia, Omnia, Digigram and Commotion. Visit bionics.co.uk today.
Time for a news update now. Here's Roy Martin.
Thank you, Stuart. From Radio Today's newsroom, here's the latest. John Myers has caused a stir in the industry this week by blogging about the little or no pay some presenters get for broadcasting on national radio stations. It sparked a bigger debate covering minimum wage, work experience programmes, and of course, a look back to the good old days when we all did something for nothing. See more in the latest eRadio and on our website, of course. Another US radio format could soon be heading to the UK as Jack FM owners Sparknet say plans are underway to launch the 24-hour hits an hour format here and in Australia. Place your bets now on which station will try it first. And Pirate 2 has launched on DAB in Cornwall. It replaces the slot previously used by Pirate FM and has extra specialist programming such as a business show and farming news. That's the latest from radiotoday.co.uk. I'm Roy Martin.
Thank you, Roy. History lesson time. It's David Lloyd.
Radio Moments. David Lloyd and you.
We start this week in 1977 and the first commercial radio outing for this character.
Enjoy the afternoon sound on Radio Trend.
Thank you very much, Steve. Right, it's 17 minutes before 4, and I'll see you through till 5:30 with the best of music, and this was Land's record of the week for the week, a couple of weeks ago. It's by Tony Ottoria, and it's called You're So Good to Me. Give it a listen, you might like it.
Dale Winton on commercial radio for the first time this week 37 years ago, and there he was in those early days at Trent Hotfoot from Factory Radio UBN. He's 76 this week, and one of the nation's best-known broadcasters.
It's Emperor Roscoe and Radio 1 Club. Good day to you. Of course, when I say good, I'm speaking metamorphically. Still, not one more word about the weather.
Terry Wogan in his Radio 1 days. From time to time, Terry's spoken about radio and his concerns.
When I listen to a lot of local commercial radio particularly, I'm very worried it's beginning to sound like American radio. The people are beginning to sound like blancmange. They all sound the same. If what you're being paid for is to introduce a record program, you must give it something more than whatever the current hip phraseology is. You must give it something more than a request. You must give it something more than banality. You must give it yourself.
Happy birthday, Terry Wogan. 7 years ago this week, the Gold Network began. 7 o'clock, August the 3rd.
No constraints in the music we play. If it's a great song from any genre during the last 5 decades, then you will hear it on Gold, the radio station created by the merging of the Capital Gold and Classic Gold radio networks. Gold delivering the widest breadth of music currently available.
Sean Dilley on the early days of Gold. From the press this week, what have we got? 8th of August 1973, this is the Telegraph, and there's a report here. It's all about the new commercial stations on the horizon. The headline is, Radio Adverts to Interrupt Every 10 Minutes. Shock horror. A huge transmitter beamed out for the first time this week, 25 years ago.
This is Atlantic 252. To improve your reception of our signal on the long wave band, you could simply try lifting your radio set and turning it around a little bit to either the left or the right. Regular broadcasts of Atlantic 252 will begin soon.
Radio was such a physical thing back then, wasn't it? The early broadcasts from Atlantic 252, broadcasting from Ireland for the first time this week 25 years ago. It went on to attract huge audiences. It's 3 years now since Michael Bucht died. He'd helped to found Classic FM and was the first official program controller of Capital, as its first MD recalls.
He was a lightning conductor in bringing together people with diverse views, and in some way fusing them and infusing them to do things that they hadn't thought of doing before. He was a very charismatic figure.
I'm not sure that the technology is going to make that much difference. I think for most people, radio is a friend that comes out of a box on the fridge or by the bed. And mostly they don't really care whether it's being transmitted via Mars or coming down a pipe, you know, underground. So there's a real danger of us getting carried away by all of that. I think better reception always helps, which is why FM's taken over from AM, and I've no doubt that digital in due course will take over from FM. But people really are interested in the human being in the box and what he or she's got to say and what he or she's got to play.
Michael Bucht, otherwise known as Chef Michael Barry, who died this week in 2011. It's also the anniversary this week of the death of another commercial radio founder, Jay Oliver. Jay'd come from California and ended up in Wolverhampton, starting Beacon Radio.
We've come up with a thing called News As It Happens. We will mix that with a News on the Hour, which we will take from independent radio news. That'll be national and international news. And then in the hour, depending on what happens in the hour, we will come into the programming and integrate into the programming news bulletins as there is news that merits being aired.
The music is the sunshine.
Jay Oliver, managing director, and a bit of on-air work too at Beacon Radio. Jay died this week in 2008. Beacon was well known as a mischievous station, not always sticking to the rules. And this week in 77, the station got a visit from its regulator, the IBA, and their report said they were disappointed with local content, religion, and how Beacon cared for older listeners. Yes. This week, last year, saw the final show from David Jacobs.
And that, I'm afraid, brings to an end the David Jacobs collection, which I've been presenting now for many years. More than anything else, I couldn't have done it without my producer and friend, Alan Boyd, and also the kindness shown to me by the controllers and members of staff here at Radio 2. They've been most kind and patient, but mostly I'd like to thank you all. I hope to be spending more time with you in not too distant future. So, until then or whenever, it's good night for me, David Jacobs.
Hello there. Well, as we've captured the air for the next hour and a bit, we hope we've captured you as well. And this is as good a place as any to remind you how we make up the hit parade on this programme. You know, we take the average of the placings in three leading musical papers. This way, instead of, as is possible, getting three different placings for one record, we get just one.
Some early words and the last words on air from David Jacobs this week last year. He'd been on Radio 2 and the Light programme, Luxembourg as well, and was also on the original Capital board. So, with sport going from Radio 2 to 5 this week 24 years ago.
Radio 2 goes racing.
Noel Edmonds returning briefly to Radio 2 this week 11 years ago.
In fact, it's 25 years since I last hosted a daily radio show.
And Pirate Radio 355 closing down this week 47 years ago.
The reasons that have been given for closing us all down are excuses, of course, not reasons. Just political dogma, surrounded by a tremendous element of hypocrisy.
Those are this week's Radio Moments.
Radio Moments!
Thanks, David, and thank you, Roy, for the news update. And our thanks also this week for material used in the podcast to the BBC and to aircheckdownloads.com. That's it from the Radio Today programme for this week. Next week, I'll be talking to Janice Long about her 30-odd years in radio and her upcoming move to Salford as part of the changes to Radio 2's overnight schedule. I'm Stuart Clarkson, keeping the seat warm for Trevor, Dan. Thank you for listening.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.